The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, gives me great, great pleasure to welcome Willa White, the comedian and actor, to the show today. You can see him in the Ambassador's Theatre in April. Is that right?
You can indeed. April. You'll probably see me sometime beforehand on a stage telling jokes as well.
Oh yeah. So because you're, God, you have so many hats that you wear. Yeah. You have a day job. You were telling us.
I have. I'm an award-winning podcaster.
Yeah.
Have a podcast called You Must Be Joking with myself and my fellow friend Eric Lawler. And we won the Digital Media Awards last year. We've been just gone 8 months.
Did you and Eric know each other growing up?
No, we didn't. Me and Eric met through Des Bishop.
Yeah, I knew you were both on that, but I didn't know if you'd known each other beforehand. No.
No, never knew Eric at all whatsoever, no.
All right, okay.
So we just became friends through that and we're really close friends, yeah.
So you have your award-winning podcast, you have your day job, you've got
stand-up comedy.
Stand-up comedy. And then you've got The Examination, your show that's...
Yeah, yeah. Well, the show is basically from a company called Broken Talkers, who consist of Phelim Cannon and Gary Keegan. And they have both been gone for a good few years now. And they do a lot of close-to-the-bone, real kind of stuff. None of it is fiction. It's all fact. So they've done stuff in the past about... you know, Letterfrack and, you know, people that were there and recorded live interviews with one guy in particular who was on his deathbed. And he was talking about his experiences of being there and being in industrial schools. And yeah, they've done a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff that people really wouldn't kind of be talking about, I suppose, so to speak. So I got involved in this project through a message on Twitter at the time. Yeah. Which is now X. And it was a message in me direct messages, and it was Phelim asking me would I be interested in getting involved in a project he was doing, and he was looking for an ex-prisoner, which I am an ex-prisoner. Last time been in prison was 3.5 years, and I got out in 2001 and I turned my life around. So since 2001 up to the present day, I'm in recovery. I'm a recovering addict, and I haven't drank or haven't used since. So I turned my life around. They were looking for someone to play the part who, you know, wasn't an actor or hadn't got a lot of acting experience. They spoke to a music teacher in Mountjoy Prison and he put my name forward, and that's when they got on to me. And I went in and spoke to them. They had an office in the Corporation Fruit Markets at the time, which isn't there no more. And we spoke about this project and I was interested in doing it. I thought it would be a great...
So is this iteration of The Examination, is this your story? Or are you just similarities?
No, some of it is my story.
All right, okay.
So I have contributed to the play a little. So it would be my story about mental health. I suffered with mental health in my past as a young man, and I've been in 3 psychiatric hospitals, and it kind of talks about that, and it delves into addiction, and then it delves into the world of the prison system in Ireland. But also, it was meant to be a one-piece play. It was meant to be a one-man play. And through circumstances, I had recordings of my voice being distorted by the guy that was doing sound, and it wasn't really working that well. So they got Gary to talk in it.
Yeah.
And then from Gary talking in it, we found out that Gary had been mugged in London a good few years ago when he was in college. So then the play kind of took a bit of a turn and they went off, you know, off the track. And it turned out then that the play became Gary, who was an ex-victim of crime, an ex-victim of crime, me, who was an ex-criminal.
Yeah.
So Gary's talking about his experience. I'm talking about my experience. We talk about the welfare and we talk about the health issues that are going on in the Irish prison system. They also went in that time and done 18 months before they'd met me researching Mountjoy Prison with prisoners that were doing life sentences in prison. Mm. Most, all prisoners that are doing life sentence in prison is for murder. That's basically what you get a life sentence for. And they took some extracts for them and they put this whole piece of theatre together, and they got a visual guy in that put up this big screen, and there was... It's an amazing piece of theatre. I was so privileged, so honoured to be part of it. We started off, you know, doing Project Arts. We went to Axis and Ballymun. We done the Dreacht. We toured it all around the country. We took it to Edinburgh. We took it to a theatre festival in Paris. We took it to Berlin. We took it to Brussels. We took it to Edinburgh. We've been all over the place with it.
And did you, when Gary was talking about his experience, whether that's through kind of the rehearsals or just putting it all together, what did you learn from his account of his experience as a victim of crime, if anything?
Well, I've always had empathy for victims of crime. Luckily enough for me, any time that I was in prison, there was never a third party involved in any of my crimes that anybody, you know, and at that, I'm not saying that makes me different from any criminal that's in prison. My crime was my crime, but it was never violence or it was never muggings or it was never a third party or anything.
What was it?
Basically possession with intent to supply, trespass and shoplifting, misdemeanor kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing kind of that would have winded me up in prison for years and years and years. Like, even though over the years, when you put it all together, I'd probably been locked up for about 7 or 8 years altogether when it all, you know, for all the crimes that were committed. But it gave me empathy, it gave me understanding of what it's like to be a victim of crime. And, you know, there are a lot of victims of crime, you know, that might say that where we are in prison is a holiday camp. And we kind of get into that in the play. And it's not a holiday camp. Prison is prison. It does exactly what it says on the tin. It takes you away from society. It takes you away from the people that you love. It takes you away from the structure and the routine that you have in your life. And you jump and you skip when they say so. And you're fed and you use the toilet when they say so as well. A lot of the time, you know.
What was it? What's it like, say, after the... What was the longest period? Was it three and a half years, the last one?
Yeah. So I got a 5.5 year prison sentence with a review after 3.5 years. That was under conditions that I tried to do something about my addiction and quit, which I did. You know, by the time I went up after the 3.5 years, I'd been living in London, so I was extradited home from London. So I'd been away from Dublin, so to speak, even though I spent the last 3.5 years in Dublin, I'd been away from the place that I'd lived for nearly 6 years altogether.
Yeah.
Which was a good break and kind of that thing of our sight, our mind.
Yeah.
So I had a good kind of starting block to get off there when I did get out again, you know.
What was it like when you walked out of Mountjoy onto the North Circular?
Well, I this sentence I didn't. So I was up on a review and I got out of Green Street Special Criminal Courts in the fruit markets.
All right, okay.
So, and the reason I was up there wasn't because I was a terrorist or anything like that. It just so happened that there was a guy from the IRA that was up the day I was up, and the judge who was dealing with him was the judge that was dealing with me.
So I
ended up going there. I didn't get out the first day because the case went on too long with the guy from the IRA. And the second day, I went up and the judge was really happy with the improvements and said what I'd done, and I'd been going to a 12-step program and I'd clean urines and everything was going really well in my life. So he'd no reason to hold me anymore. So I left court that day, and it was very, very different to any other time that I got out of prison. Because usually any time I got out of prison, whether it was walking out of a court or whether it was walking out of the North Circular Road, I'd done what I always done and I went and I got drugs. And that was usually the first thing that I done. Didn't care about family, didn't want to go home and see anybody. My main objective was to get, you know, some heroin or to get whatever it was I needed, because I would be usually strung out when I got out of jail. This time was different. I wasn't. I was in a better position. I was in a better place. I knew what I needed to do to stay clean and sober on the outside, and I took a different path.
Yeah. How different then is your life today compared to before that stretch in prison? And just in terms of the day-to-day, the chaos maybe of what life was like before today.
I'm a million miles away from where I was, say, going back 25 years. Like, 25 years ago, I was in prison. Like, and before I was in prison, I was living in London. At the end of my using, in London in particular, I was living in a car. I was homeless. My life was upside down. I had a crack cocaine. I had a heroin habit. I'd no self-respect, no self-worth, no dignity, no, self-hygiene was on the ground. And my day-to-day life, like what I talked about, was just getting up and using drugs, like, and whatever that took to get the drugs, that was what I'd done, like, you know. And it was, I'm a million miles away you know, from where I am, obviously today life has changed so much. I'm, you know, I'm a pillar of the community where I'm from. I've got a, you know, I've got a job. I pay me taxes. I've got kids. I've got grandkids. I've got a mortgage. I've got all the stuff that comes with being a responsible, you know, person and contributing to society. And it's not all about material things for me. And the best things I've got in recovery are the stuff inside. It's, you know, it's how I am inside rather than how I am outside. Like, it doesn't, you know, what I drive or where I live or how I dress or doesn't make me the person that I am. Like, I think my qualities and my values come internally. And I think it does with a lot of people.
And, you know, you mentioned right at the outset that three times you were in psychiatric hospital.
Yeah.
Was it three? Was that all drug-induced psychosis or were there underlying mental health things?
Well, the first time I ended up in London was drug-induced psychosis, 100%.
LSD, was it?
Yeah, it was. I ended up in a psychiatric intensive care unit. I got sectioned and I ended up in a unit in Homerton in Hackney for about 7 months. And then I came home after the 7 months. If I be honest, I don't think I was ready to come home. I was still very ill. I came home and I lived with my sister for a good while in Ballymun. And then I done the same thing again and I got drug psychosis again. I ended up in Dundrum at the Central Mental Hospital. And then from Dundrum, I ended up in Vincent's on the Richmond Road on the north side of Dublin. Mm. So very, very frightening experiences. Kind of in psychosis. So you kind of think what's not really happening, even though you think that it's happening, is happening. And there was a lot of stuff that I fabricated in my own mind and in my own head, what was going on, which wasn't really going on. So it's a horrible, horrible place for any human being to be. Yeah. Drug psychosis. It's really difficult to deal with it, and you don't think that you're going to come back to any type of normality at all. And luckily enough for me, somewhere along the line, something happened and, you know, I got out of that place. My sister was a great big part in, she detoxed me from the psychiatric medication that I was on. I was on a psychiatric daycare clinic in Ballymun, and I was on a lot of medication and got myself around to some kind of normality. And then when I kind of got away from that, obviously it never took, you know, psychotics again, like taking LSD.
Yeah.
Took the path to taking heroin, which was 10 times probably worse. But when I look back on all my using through my life as a young, you know, child, right up to when I stopped using, I suffered with childhood trauma. There was a lot of stuff going on at home.
Mm.
My father was an alcoholic, was very violent with myself, my sister and my mother. And he was coming from childhood trauma as well. There was a lot of trauma in his home, and his father was basically cut from the same cloth that my father was cut from. And unfortunately for him, there was no life coaches, or there was no sea swimming, and there was no gyms or, you know, breathing classes or meditation or relaxation. And he'd no other way to challenge it other than drinking and talking to people that had probably been through the same stuff. And that was just the way it was, you know.
Yeah, the demons that you would have battled with then as a youngster, have they been banished now, or are they just quietened?
No, they're not banished. They're quietened. I'm still a work in progress. I still see a psychotherapist every now and again. I'm damaged from my childhood.
Mm.
I know how to deal with it a lot better. Most days. Some days, if I'm not doing the things that I should be doing by looking after my mental health, like psychotherapist and, you know, doing a bit of sea swimming and kind of looking after myself, really, I suffer. My head does kind of go, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm still dealing with it. It's not as traumatic as it was in the early days of recovery. I've learned how to, you know, to deal with it and how to navigate my way through everyday life.
Mm.
And I'm not in a blame culture anymore. I don't blame my father. I understand, you know, and I accept what happened. And it was only really when I came into recovery that myself and my father cultivated a relationship. Like, for a lot of my using and a lot of my childhood, there was a lot of hate and a lot of anger there with him. And I never raised my hand to the man, or I was never violent with him. And I'd never any intentions of being that. Because my father, instilled so much fear into me as a kid. Even when I was a grown man and he was a frail old man, I still had that little bit of fear about him.
Yeah.
And that was the impact that I had on my life, you know.
And when you're doing all the things you're doing now, and say the examination or just doing comedy gigs or putting together a new tour or a new set or the podcast with Eric or the day job or whatever, I guess, is there one thing in that you derive most satisfaction from, or is it all of them? Or
yeah, I love it all. I've always kind of, you know, been an entertainer since I was a kid. I remember being in talent competitions when I was a child. And I suppose sometimes it kind of reflects back on when I was a kid to when I am now. Sometimes it's a great escape for me. You know, I don't have, you know, drugs or drink to push down or suppress the feelings that I dealt with when I was going through the stuff I was going with as a child and as a teenager and as a young man. So this is kind of like my drug, you know.
Yeah.
Podcasts, wherever it might be, you know, gigging in different countries, doing a play, that's kind of my drug for me, which is an awful lot more healthier, and doesn't get me into any trouble, so to speak, to what the extent of my drug use got me into. So I love it. I really, really do. I love what I do. I have a passion about what I do, and if I could, the next step would be to let go of the day job and, you know, just do this full time, like.
Yeah. What's the name of the podcast again?
The podcast is called You Must Be Joking. JOKIN. And it's on all the platforms, yeah.
On all the platforms. Wherever you get it, Google it otherwise and you'll find it. You Must Be Joking with Willa and Eric Lawler as well. The examination I mentioned, which has been in various places, as Willa said as well, but it's in the Ambassador from April 17th to the 20th as well, and tickets available on Ticketmaster. And have you got a new comedy set coming in the summer, do you?
Yeah, I've got a new show coming up. Yeah, I haven't actually got a name for it yet, so
all right,
I'm not gonna tell you what it is, but yeah, I've got a new show coming. It'll land in the summer and start off in my hometown of Ballymun in the Access. It'll be a work in progress for a few nights out there, just kind of getting the pieces of the jigsaw and trying to put it together. And then we get the show on the road and we start going again, yeah.
We wish you well with it. Willa, thanks a million for joining us.
Kieran, thanks so much. It's a pleasure.
Really, really enjoyed it. Willa White, comedian and actress.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.